Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very bluntly ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't make it sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course, so it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. And it puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. And there's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right. Lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Martin, I appreciate your comments there. I thank you very, very much. Sorry, I had my voice on my phone muted and had to redo it. Ladies and gentlemen, we've covered this. Before I introduce PJ, we're saying the same thing over and over again about jurisdiction. I found something the other day that I thought was very interesting, and I'm going to share that with you, if I may, real quickly here. Where is it? There it is. And that is that the government, the federal government, can create a federal zone anywhere that they want to, strictly based upon the alphabet agency doing work in a certain area. So that's all there is to it. Where is it here? Hold on a second. Let me get it in front of me here. Here we go. Almost. That's my cat in the background. She wants to be held. And we're just not going to do that right now. But I'm not finding what I was looking for. I should have had it before I did the call. Anyways, the bottom line is that any time a federal agency, the environmental department, education, board of education at the federal level, et cetera, when they establish themselves within one of the freely associated compact states, they can generate a federal territory right then and there, in addition to all the other federal territories that overlay each other. And the thing that you need to remember is that they are asserting something when they talk to you, whether it's a policeman, a sheriff's deputy, or a federal marshal. They're making the assertion that you are operating on territory of the United States, not one of the freely associated compact states, and that you are a federal citizen, that you are a territorial citizen, subject to the Congress, without rights from the Almighty One, but only privileges granted to you through the Congress. And the bottom line is this, is that there is a maxim in law that says he who makes the assertion upon being challenged must evidence the assertion or it's void, it doesn't exist. So keeping that in mind, let's turn the call now over to PJ and have him share with us what he wants to talk about this week. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, it's interesting. They'll claim a federal zone every time. I talked to a military guy once, and he says authority is really oftentimes comes down to force. Now, fortunately, in America, on American soil, we're not talking about a military action overseas or something, but on American soil, the Constitution says no matter how much force they have, the Constitution prevails. And the Constitution clearly identifies federal zones by land jurisdiction. And they can come in at times and have some jurisdiction contractually, but they're actually enforcing the contract. They're not enforcing a constitutional land jurisdiction established by land that's been ceded to the United States by the states, basically by the will of the people. The American people oftentimes gives certain governments land so they can do certain things that they don't want to do. I don't really want to build an aircraft carrier to defend my small area land, but I don't mind paying a little bit into the 300 some million people to do the same occasionally. But when they assert authority, the thing that we teach all our students is to contact us, and we'll help them challenge that authority. You know, once Michael's absolutely correct. In America, it still operates that he who asserts authority must produce the evidence thereof. Let's say that you're on land and I walk up and say, hey, get off this land, and you can certainly challenge my authority. Now, if I come in with a document that clearly identifies that I own the land, then we got a lot of evidence of authority there. But if I can't produce that, then there's quite a bit of question as to my authority. Then I'd have to produce evidence that the owner of the land gave me authority to tell you to get off that particular piece of land. And the same thing holds true for government. When I say government, I'm talking about the United States. There's only one government. There's only one United States Constitution that lays out what constitutes that function of that entity, and that's called the United States, the Constitution for the United States of America. And it's supported also by the Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation, Northwest Ordinance, and the probably a few more also. So what we do is if they come against you for any reason, they claim you owe property taxes, they claim you owe a federal tax, they claim you owe a state tax, they claim you owe a parking ticket, all that can be challenged. And if we do it properly, these guys, they take it back to their lawyers and they show the lawyer, and which I've done many times in traffic tickets, and the officers basically come to me and said, yeah, I did that, but the prosecutor won't help me. And I go, well, what do you mean he won't help you? He won't produce any evidence of territorial jurisdiction that I can bring into court and testify to. And I asked the officer, this is just a traffic officer. I asked him, do you think that's kind of odd? He goes, yeah, that's really odd. because in most situations, they don't have authority to take an administrative written law and apply it to you in a specific location. They do have authority, just like you have authority to enforce common law, but they don't have authority to enforce administrative law there because, guess what? They don't own the land. If the land is owned by the United States of America, the United States of America, written laws, and all its branch governments, such as state of Nebraska, Texas, California, written laws apply there, provided they're constitutional. If they're not constitutional, then they cannot apply. But in most cases, they're constitutional, but in most cases, they're constitutionally misapplied or unconstitutionally applied. That's what we do. That's what Michael Edwards seeks from many of his teachers, such as I, providers of information, to do. For example, we have, over the years, we've had many cases of IRS where the IRS, usually the individual does research, and the Internet's opened a lot of that up to where people start realizing that, hey, there appears to be no evidence that I owe a federal tax. And a lot of people come into a few really good years of income, and they just hate to write a $50,000 check to the United States government without challenging it. And they do that, and almost everyone does it incorrectly, and actually causes a potential problem for them. But it doesn't make how bad you screw it up. If you work with us, we can force them to produce evidence that you owe that tax. You don't have to do anything right. Either they have authority to require a tax from you, or they don't. And if they do, we're not going to be able to prevail. And if they don't, we will prevail. It might take us right into the appeals court and all the way up to the Supreme Court, which we're taking one case right now. Because let's just say that you did file income taxes for the last 300 years, and you finally found out that it was that you were deceived into thinking that you had to do that, and we go right into court and we present complex briefs that strongly challenge the federal judge to produce evidence that you ever filed an income tax. You might have sent in the forms, you might have signed them, you believe you signed them, but there was no disclosure, there was no understanding. That cannot rise. If you're not a taxpayer, you cannot become a taxpayer by signing a document, such as the 1040 tax form. There are several other steps that you have to go through before you are qualified or eligible to be called a taxpayer in the Title 26 tax code. They're going to say that they've had such wimpy evidence in court at times. It was comical. Some of the IRS agents would get up there and say, oh, you owe a tax because you have a Social Security number. And they say it with such confidence that the people just sit there like they don't know what to say. And all they have to do is say, what evidence do you have that because I possess a Social Security number that I have a requirement to pay any tax to the United States government based off of a filling out a 1040 or the legal duty to fill out a 1040 tax form and pay the amount that is calculated from that form. And you just shift the burden of proof on them. And they are deer in the headlights. They don't know what to say. They've done it so many years, and many IRS agents go through their entire lifetime without ever losing a case. Because most of the people that challenge the tax do not have a clue how to prevail in a U.S. court action. They have no clue at all. And the United States has systems set up to make sure that they're left in the dark, because many of the most popular sites on the Internet are owned by the government. And they constantly put out oh, you just go into court and you argue the Title 26 and you do this and you do this on, make this challenge that your wages are income, and they are losers every time, except maybe once where the IRS let somebody win so they could put it on the internet and make it look like they won so that 10,000 other people will follow that same strategy and completely fail in court. Which I've seen. I've seen the IRS allow one win just so they could bring a whole bunch of other fish into the net and bring it up. It's organized crime is what it is. And the same jurisdictional challenge that we use in the IRS case can be used for every interaction with a assumed obligation to the United States. You know, do you have an obligation to stop at a stop sign? Do you have an obligation to stop at a red light? There very well may be a common law principle there, but if you're out in the middle of Montana, there's no cars for 100 miles to the right, left, or in front of you or behind you, and you don't stop at a stop sign, or you drive through a red light cautiously. Did you violate a United States written law or a state written law? No. No, because the government doesn't own that road most often, most of the time. So they can't bring you into court and say, oh, the legislature has made this law, and you have to come to a complete stop at that stop sign or that red light. I had a legal friend of mine. He went into court in California, and he argued that he could drive through a stop sign without stopping completely for such and such reason. And as long as he doesn't do any harm to anybody, they cannot write him a ticket. And he's prevailed. He prevailed. In Texas, they do not write In California, they do not write tickets anymore for the so-called California stop. They used to make fun of California stops because people would kind of roll through the intersection looking right, looking left, looking right, looking left, and roll into the intersection without coming to a complete stop. And they were famous for writing tickets on it. And they probably made billions of dollars over the years writing tickets on that. The individual I worked with took it to court and is able to show that can't do that anymore, guys. Now, if you harm somebody, you're in big trouble. So you better look right and left really carefully when you're doing that. But they could not bring an administrative process against you and force you to stop your car 100%. It's very interesting. But they still held fast to the common law principle that you better do it safely or you're in trouble. Michael, any questions? Uh-oh. Have I been talking for the last half hour? Nobody on the phone?
No. I had my phone muted. Cat was talking. My girl was talking to me. My cat was talking to me, and she wouldn't shut up, so I muted my back phone. Anyways, got me off subject. What was it?
Any questions out there? Any questions to start?
Yeah, I know, but okay. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 to raise your hand. For those of you on Freedom's Radio, you'll see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. It's empty inside. Left-click inside. Type away your comment or your question. On the outside of that rectangle laying on its side, you'll see a place to put your contact information and hit submit. I'll be happy to give voice to your comment or your question. So let me go back and check Freedom's Radio real quick, see if anybody has raised their hand or said something. One moment. Come on, slow computer. Nope. All right, not yet, PJ.
Okay. I'll go ahead and talk.
Start
talking,
to
but, Go ahead and interrupt me anytime you wish when you have an inspired question from somebody or from yourself.
Yeah. It'll come back to me. Okay. Just go ahead.
Okay. The a lot of people in America think that, we have to come to a complete stop. We have to stop at that red light. We have to go a certain speed. No, I've been in court many times. I've worked with many clients. No. You are the supreme law in the land is common law. Who enforces common law? The people. Not the U.S. courts, not the federal or state legislatures. The highest court in the land is the people, the jury of 12. Now, what has happened over the many years is the Supreme Court flashes up this big old building, these big old pillars, these lofty chairs where the judge sits, this fancy robe they put on. Oh, nobody gets close to that judge, nobody except the bailiff. And they've got doors that are 3 inches thick. And, oh, my goodness, the authority that is there. And the truth is that grandma in the witness chair with 11 other jurors is a higher court than that federal judge. But it's really hard to convince people of that. Every time they get in trouble, every time they have a child born or they want to get married or they want to travel somewhere, they run to the government and say, oh, what do I need? What do I need to do this? And they just lost their concept of why are you asking a entity that is willing to agree with the murder of 1/4 of our population through abortions to help you? Are you insane? Are you insane? Come on. And then they buy land and they go, oh, Mr. Attorney, help me. I just bought this land and I want to make sure that it's all legal and proper. And the attorney goes down and he registers it with the County Registry of Deeds. And he puts in the language that makes it appear like it's taxable. And guess what? You pay more in taxes over the ownership of that land than you ever paid for the purchase of it in the first place. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. People do not understand what freedom is. Freedom means free from whatever you want to put in that line. Freedom. You're never free from God's governance. You do have to give Caesar what belongs to Caesar, but guess what? Caesar doesn't own the roads. He doesn't own your job. He doesn't own your income. He doesn't own your house. He doesn't own your children. He doesn't own anything, hardly at all, except what the people have given him, and that is clearly defined in the Constitution. The Constitution is a military document. They're not supposed to be messing around with any welfare, any Medicare, any Social Security for people that do not belong to their body politic. You can join their system if you want. And I recommend, Ronald Reagan said that if you take your investments that they've taken from you and Social Security and invested it during your lifetime, you'd make, I think he said, 10 times, yeah, I think he said 10 times. You'd have 10 times more in Social Security retirement today when you turn 65. 10 times. Today, let's just say you have $1,000 from your Social Security check. Well, you're tickled to death. You're getting something back. Ronald Reagan's research showed that if you would have done it as a free man and as a wise individual, just hired a company to invest it properly for you. There's lots of them out there that are very successful for hundreds of years, that you'd be getting 10 times that $1,000. You'd be getting $10,000 a month instead of, because money and investments grow exponentially. it builds on itself, and it over a 40-year period, it turns into quite a revenue builder, especially if you have it in assets that don't deflate in value. Very few things inflate in value because the inflation is a false indicator, because so what? Something doubles in price. It still doesn't produce any more. The chicken doubles in price. It still doesn't produce any more eggs that day. So it doesn't amount to a whole lot. Anyway, I'm surprised we're not getting any questions today, because this is a very important concept of understanding freedom. Some of these philosophers over the years, I can't remember who it was, somebody like Thomas Jefferson or somebody. I don't know why we quote Thomas Jefferson all the time. He was rather poor in a lot of ways. He didn't hold the biblical principles very well. I think the secular world promotes him so that we don't do any research and find godly advice from the other founding fathers. But anyway, he one of those guys said that the most important thing a man can do in his daily in his lifetime is challenge authority. When you go in and you start looking to buy a loaf of bread, and somebody says, "Hey, you got to pay me $2.50 for that loaf of bread." Well, I do if I want to buy it, but I'm going to go down the street and check out what Bill has for his bread. So, in a very simple way, you're actually challenging authority in a sense. You're checking out your options. So when the government comes to you and says, "Hey, you need to pay your property taxes," challenge authority. Very little land in America has a legal duty. Landowners have a legal duty to pay property taxes. And it sounds crazy. 99% of the people will look at you cross-eyed, but about 80% of those people will say, "Man, I wish that was true. It should be true. I shouldn't have to pay property taxes on something I own." And they see that it's true what you're saying, but they live in such fear. And usually when you get in a position that you can finally do something, you're pretty much financially healed and you're too scared to lose it. So the government wins in the beginning because you're naive. And then they win on the end because you're fearful of losing what you have. It's thank God the founding fathers of our country did not have any fear of losing all their wealth, because they said it was better to do the right thing than to build their own personal wealth. And a great many of them did lose all their wealth. And some foolish people will say they were foolish for doing that. And I pity those people with that type of mindset. I'd rather help millions of people live a better life than provide a better life just for myself. The latter is basically not pleasing to God. It's sin. Michael, you got to have a question. Come on.
I had one that was a good question, and then I got sidetracked with being on, having muted myself, and then I forgot it. I'm sorry. Press star two on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. I thought I'd bring it back up, but I guess not.
Yeah.
Press star two
yeah.
on your keypad if you have a question. Otherwise, it's going to be a quiet call tonight and ending early. Ah, there we go. Tommy.
Okay.
I got your call the other day. I just haven't had a chance to return it. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious about that. The first few pages on that document that you got from me, the federal court clearly admitted that they were outside of their jurisdiction. But on the last few pages, they declined to vacate my indictment. What gives?
I don't know. We're going to have John look at that, because that's a little confusing to me. Oftentimes they don't have jurisdiction to do certain activities at a certain stage in the legal process. That might be what they're referring to. But if they don't have all the legs of jurisdiction throughout the case, then we're going to force them to produce those legs. And if they come up short, let's say they require to have three elements of jurisdiction, and they come up short on one of those legs, the chair falls over, and the court is in want of jurisdiction, and they must dismiss your indictment. Your indictment has a lot to do with land jurisdiction, claiming that activity
right.
at a specific location. The second thing is entrapment. The third thing is, have the American people ever give them authority for entrapment? There's probably two or three things that we haven't even thought about yet on that whole thing.
So it looks like it might be headed toward John then, for sure, right?
Oh, yes. A lot of people like me, we know the court is in want of jurisdiction, but John is just an expert at bringing that to bear in a fashion where the judge is in a position to, if he doesn't do the right thing, he's in a position of losing his house, losing his tenure,
right.
losing his glorious position as a federal judge. Believe it or not, these judges, even the attorney, when I talk to attorneys, they make sure that I don't have a cell phone on with me. They go to a place where there's no bugs that could possibly be listening to it. And we've even found people, the CIA or the FBI or somebody, pointing a laser at our window where we have our meetings to try to hear our conversation. Because they could be a quarter mile away. They could be a quarter mile away and listen to our conversation.
Yeah, my mother has actually found footprints outside the windows in the mud.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons that might be that way, but it just very well might be the government. There might be a bug stuck on your window out there to listen to the conversation. Your case is high level enough that there's probably a listening device on your mom's landline. There's probably a listening device on any landline that you use. There's they have the technology to have a bug electronically walk into your home, get positioned under between the carpet and the end of the wall, and just sit there and listen, and send information to whoever wants it. They have devices that they can aim at that bug, and it sends a radio wave and almost like a laser beam. It'll go right through your metal walls, and it'll charge that device. They've had that since 1940. I had an individual that worked with X-ray devices that could work, that could go through two pieces of housing, a metal tin, like a tin roof, could go through two levels and absolutely identify the person on the other side of it. Amazing. I mean, matter is mostly space, and they've got the technology to easily identify or to accurately get the energy through there. But anyway, we've had cases that have been high level like yours, and we've investigated the house. We found several listening devices, and some of them were hooked to the phone line. And as soon as we found them, started talking about them, the next day somebody came and took them. So if you ever find a listening device, you cannot call us and tell us. You cannot. You have to call you have to go straight to the sheriff, and you have to take all kinds of pictures of it and get your neighbors out there and take pictures of it. Have your neighbor standing right there holding the date card in their hand. Take a picture of it and then call the sheriff. And don't call the sheriff with the phone. You walk in and you open the door and you go in and ask him, to talk to him and ask him to leave his cell phone. Ask him if you'd walk out into the parking lot and leave all your cell phones behind. And then you got to whisper to him. I'm telling you. The technology is there. If they know that you're hot onto something that could make them look very bad, there'll be a car aiming a device at you that's going to try to listen to your conversation in that parking lot. So it's weird, but we've come across that, and it's just that's one reason the government hardly ever loses a case, because they've got people out there when a case starts getting defended by high level people, they're out there trying to get all the information they can to prevent a loss by the government. They'll spend millions and millions of dollars to keep from losing an IRS case, because it could affect them several billion dollars over the next 10 years easily. Your case is no different. They don't want anybody to know. I mean, let's just say that I did do something terrible. They don't want anybody to know that the United States government doesn't have any jurisdiction. The American people have the organic jurisdiction, the general jurisdiction in that case, not the American U.S. courts. Go ahead. You've got a question?
PJ, you brought up the elements of jurisdiction. I went ahead and just Googled it real quickly, used a search engine. And there is standing, there's timeliness, there's subject matter jurisdiction. But the other one, the last one, is respondent jurisdiction. Respondent would be the defendant, I would presume, responding to a claim. And they're telling you right there that the jurisdiction of the respondent may or may not exist. How is that? It means that there has to be more than one jurisdiction. As simple as
right.
that. And that brings us to the point of the respondent jurisdiction. Is that on the land of the United States or the land of the within the freely associated compact states? Is it a citizen of one of the freely associated compact states, or is it a territorial citizen? So when you challenge jurisdiction, you've got your reason right there to leverage your question about jurisdiction. Because that's one of the elements. That's one of the legs, one of the four legs that holds up jurisdiction.
Okay.
Exactly.
Anything else, Tommy?
Have y'all made any headway on the 1983s?
That was the next question that we had at Freedom's Radio, so it was perfectly timed. Go ahead, Tommy.
I would say yes, and Michael is aware of them. This is a railroad track that's laid down one tie at a time. It's not easy. Would you agree with that, Michael?
It hasn't shown to be easy. It's been very frustrating.
Very, very frustrating. But nothing has changed. The Constitution stands. The highest court in the land is the people. Nothing's changed. Thankfully, it's still there. They're trying to whittle away at that. And one of the biggest ways they're doing it is nobody has the knowledge. Nobody has knowledge that even federal judges don't even know what territorial jurisdiction is. A friend of mine was in a meeting. There was three or maybe five federal judges there. And we started explaining to them territorial jurisdiction. And two of the federal judges said, you know, I've never heard this before. What is this? What are you talking about? And the three other federal judges explained it to him and said that, you know, the federal government is limiting it to jurisdiction on their own land, the land that's been ceded to them. Otherwise, the general jurisdiction defaults to the common law of the American people. And the two federal judges says, okay, you just got explaining this to me, and I still don't understand. This is so far from where we were taught in college and what I've experienced being on the bench for 16 years. This is like a paradigm shift. He says, this is bizarre. Now, a lot of lawyers will actually put their fingers in their ears and they'll run out screaming because they know that something is coming against their way of life. And they go, I don't want this. No, 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 no. If I follow this path, I'll get blacklisted, and I won't get invited to golf with all the other judges anymore. But that is, throughout history, corrupt government, corrupt tyrants get into positions because of lack of knowledge of the people. And Michael is a hero in my eyes, bringing people together to get this knowledge out to the masses. And thank God for the internet. It used to be thank God for the printing press, and thank God for the telegraph, and then thank God for the telephone. And now it's a big, big, huge step in the right direction. Thank God for internet. So it's an extremely exciting time for people. And I think if a nation is blessed, God will bring people up to understand this knowledge and spread it to the masses. It almost seems like our nation is cursed, and this process is being hindered presently because God says, "Nope, I'm gonna. You guys are misbehaving in such a major way here. Is I'm not gonna bless your country with this." With the truth for a while here. That doesn't mean individuals can't prevail, and we certainly have in many of our cases. We've never lost an IRS case, and credit cards. I've never lost a credit card case. Some of the other providers have never lost a credit card case. We've got lots of success in lots of areas. So, but we've never really lost anything, because the cases are still open. Where we're in the right, we still have traction, and we're in the right on I think everything we're working on right now. Go ahead, somebody got a question?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Tommy. Tommy asked the question that Lesko asked in Freedom's Radio, so we got that done. I'd like to further state that I have come into association with other people in the last 30 days that I hope to augment with the work that PJ is doing, bringing in the intellectual property that they have worked all their lives to assemble, and taking into consideration of that, plus some of these people, I'm going to say it this way, they may be in the legal system themselves and are playing two sides, two faces to the same issue, meaning that on one side of the face, they're doing what they do in the law, but on the other side of the face, they are assisting independent individual people who are making a difference. And they're sharing with them what their capacity that they may have as a jurist would yield as great benefit and counsel to the people that are doing the work like PJ. So there's a lot of great inroads that are being made and a lot of progress. We're coming up near the top of the hour. We've got time for one more question. If anybody else would like to, it's press star 2 on the keypad. And we'll see if we can answer any other questions. Let me check Freedom's Radio while you're thinking about doing that, pressing the button. Nothing added there. Well, PJ, I think that we're going to close out this evening.
I do have one question. And the question is why? Why? It's because it's the right thing to do. What Michael's doing, what all these people are trying to do, it's not easy, but it's the right thing to do. Always do the right thing, and you'll be on the right track. Thank you, Michael.
I appreciate you. Well, I guess we'll say until next week. Good night and be well, everyone.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.